Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. It was an interesting week for Israel. Who knows what the upcoming week will bring. But Israel managed to assassinate the number one leader of Hamas. They were also able to verify that they had killed several weeks ago the number three leader in Hamas. Now that all that really remains is Sinwar, and they will have a trifecta of Hamas's leadership. At the same week, they were able to kill the number two leader of Hezbollah. Hezbollah, by the way, is a Quranic party. Hezbollah is actually mentioned twice in the Quran. So it's bothersome to me when Hezbollah is referenced exclusively as a terrorist group, because they are an Islamic group. Hezbollah means party of Allah. And Hamas, which is from a Hebrew word, it means terrorist, is also an Islamic organization. And to refer to them as anything else is misleading. And while I would celebrate the death of these swine, the world is better off without them. Still say that it will make no difference until Israel fundamentally changes its attitude towards Islam, towards these people called the Fakistinians, towards any kind of negotiation with Muslims. I was deeply troubled this week when, after the assassination of Hanifa in Iran, which is deeply embarrassing for the Shiite theocracy there, because they killed him right under their nose, which means Israel just as easily could have killed the Ayatollahs, which I think would be in their interest. I would do it if I were them, just as I think they should kill Nasrallah. I think that is also in their interest. The reality here is that so long as Israel continues to say that they're fighting terrorist organizations and Hamas and Hezbollah, they're going to lose, because they'd be lashing out at symptoms. And then it becomes one man's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. Kamala Harris, who I despise, I view her as one of the most lethal people on the planet vis-a-vis Israel. She is more conniving, if you will, than any member of the squad. And given the opportunity as president, if she's elected, you can be assured that the only country that keeps Israel from being embargoed by the world, the United States, by its veto and the Security Council of the United Nations, will stop doing so. Mm-hmm. And it brings up a discussion I had with one of my dearest friends, who is absolutely covenant and wants the best for not only the covenant family, but also for his family, who has a family that's comprised of people who identify themselves as progressives. And he's disappointed that I am so vehement against progressives on this program. He says, you know, it precludes someone that he dearly loves, family members, and I understand that. I can appreciate that, from considering this message, because as a progressive, they have a knee-jerk reaction and says, if you are condemning progressives, which I have done and will continue to do, and I will share the reasons why in a moment, that you must be for that other guy, and they have a visceral hatred for Republicans and for Donald Trump in particular. I'm no fan of Donald Trump, but I'm also not stupid. And I know that Donald Trump, for all of his ego and foibles, was still the best president for Israel, which I care deeply about, than any other occupant of the White House in perhaps 200 years. And I know that Kamala Harris would be a disaster for Israel, and I work for Yahweh. That is my job. I serve Yahweh's people on behalf of God's request. And so I have done what I said I would never do. I am a one-issue man as it relates to politics. While I am anti-political and I do not participate in either political party, and I would encourage everyone who is a covenant member to disengage from politics, not support a candidate and not vote, I am so supportive of Israel that even with Israel's being a house divided with progressives on one side and the ultra-religious on the other, and they're both wrong and they're tearing the country to shreds while it's being attacked from outside and inside by Muslims, and their parliamentary system is a disaster. It's a country that doesn't even have a constitution, which means they have no business even having a high court because there's no limits on their power. That even with all of that being the case, Yahweh's interest is his people. It's always been that way. His place is Israel. His people are Yehudim, Jews. Care deeply about them, and anyone who tries to harm them in any way, whether they be Christians or conspiratorialists or Muslims or now progressives, you become my foe. You are God's foe. And in this particular case, while it is obvious that the Roman Catholic Church has been an enemy of God's people, of Jews, for almost 2,000 years, that the Christian New Testament exists to replace Jews with a Gentile church, and to blame Jews for their God reneging on his relationship with him and therefore hating the people that he says he loves. Now, of course, everything we read in the prophets is exactly the opposite of the Christian point of view, but evidence and reason, even God's word, has never appealed to the religious. And so as a result of a vehemently anti-Semitic New Testament and replacement theology, Christians have persecuted, dehumanized, demonized, and persecuted Jews for better part of 2,000 years. I am vehemently anti-Christianity. I am vehemently anti-Islam, and I'm the only person on this planet that has ever written a series of books denouncing both Islam and Christianity, and doing so in both cases by comparing the words of those who claim that they spoke for the God of the Torah to the words of the God of the Torah. And so I am vehemently against Islam because Islam declared war on Jews and perpetrated genocide against God's people starting 1,400 years ago with Muhammad and the first Muslims. They exterminated every Jew within camel ride of Yathrib. They were savages. And their hatred and Allah's hatred of Jews is unfathomable and unquenchable and undeniable. That's why on the initial covers of Goddamn Religion, when they're restated, the cover quoted Muhammad as saying, kill every Jew. It's been tamed down to Islamic terror now. Nonetheless, that was the message. But Christians and Muslims aren't the only foes against Jews, and not the only foe that I am speaking out against. I speak out against conspiratorialists. The most popular conspiracies over the last 2,000 years have been blame the Jews. Jews are blamed for all manner of things, and it reminds me of the saying that, tell me what you have against Jews, and I will tell you who you are. And almost universally, the claims that Muslims, including congresswomen, hold out against Jews, they are guilty themselves of doing, and the Jews are not. And so it is a world of utter chaos and insanity that they come from, and the only solution to Islam is to quarantine it. It is a pandemic disease vastly more deadly than COVID. But today, Muslims who are rioting worldwide, who are protesting to annihilate Jews, which is what from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, means, they would have no traction, no sanction, no opportunity, no credibility if it were not for progressives. They are coddled, they are supported by progressives who march with them, who scream out lies about Israel along with them. And since Muslims are genuinely too stupid to get out of their own way, with an IQ averaging about 70, without progressives, they'd be nothing.
Agreed.
It's the progressives that want to state solution. Muslims don't even want it. They want Israel annihilated. And so progressives are the problem.
Yep.
They are the enemy of Yahweh. They're the enemy of God people. They're my enemy. I'm sorry. They can say, well, that's not what it means to me. Well, I'm sorry, but that happens to be the essence of who you are today.
Right.
And you know, it goes beyond that, and that is that Yahweh is anti-government. He says the bigger the government, the bigger the problem. When Israel wanted to have a government like the Gentiles, quickly explained to Shamuel the 12 things that that government was going to do that would be harmful to his people. And everything he said is true and plain out today. The bigger the government, the worse it is. The bigger any human institution is, the worse it is. Man can be good or bad. Man as a communal creature is always bad. There has never been a human civilization that was good. And most of them have been hideously vicious and destructive. Collective man is horrible. Progressives, the new name for socialist secular humanists. They want larger government. They want more government control and intrusion into people's lives. They would be wrong. They would be opposed to what Yahweh stands for. No, let's be honest. Hitler was a progressive. Mao was a progressive. Stalin was a progressive. They were all extremely liberal in their desire to control others and to increase the influence of government. It was the German Socialist Workers' Party.
Yes.
They were all progressives. If we were to apply the term as it's being used today, they would all be progressives. Brings me to this current election. Progressives have this visceral hatred of Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump says a lot of stupid stuff. Now, his policies were better for America than were Biden's. But Biden doesn't say as many insane things. He just can't put two sentences together. But this visceral hatred of an individual is a communal effect of progressivism.
Mm-hmm. Yes, too.
Just a response. And when the person that they will now vote for would be the single most destructive individual vis-a-vis the survival of God's people, Israel. While the person they would vote against would be their biggest supporter in the world. That would make them an enemy of God's people, which would make them an enemy of God. And so I have long said that if you want to be overtly political, no matter how you view your politics, well, I only want to be a progressive because, well, I think a woman should have control over her body. All right, that's your choice. That's a good choice as far as it goes, but unfortunately, women not being able to control their bodies is why they're using abortion as a form of contraceptive.
Good point.
You yes. know, they might say, well, I'm in favor of Black Lives Matter. Well, then that would be really stupid because 90% of the time that a young black man is killed, he is killed by another black man, which means the
yep.
problem is in the African-American community. And until you identify the problems in the African-American community and start to deal with them, you ought not be pointing the finger at the cause of the other 10% of harm. That's just the reality. Plus, as I've said, those that profited from Black Lives Matter were anti-Israel. And now that has become overtly apparent. Two states is not a solution, and that's what they give lip service to. It is the dissolution of Israel. Prophecies are abound about what's going to happen. Dode spoke of them, as did Yeshayah, and said that the consequence of this is going to bring the worst war that Israel has ever experienced. So it is a race to see who can be the next Neville Chamberlain. And just like the last Neville Chamberlain led to the deaths of 6 million Jews, this next Neville Chamberlain will usher in the deaths of millions of Jews. And this time it may not be 6 million Jews who are killed. It may only be 3 or 4 million. Could be 5 million. But there's a difference. Hitler and his goons, while they starved many Jews and worked many Jews to death, their principal means of killing Jews was to gas them,
mm-hmm.
put them to sleep, and then burn their bodies in their crematorium. That isn't how Muslim savages work.
Correct.
No. They taunt their victims. They rape their victims. They mutilate their victims. They taunt their victims some more. They rape their victims some more. They kill their victims and continue to rape them. And then they desiccate their bodies, and then they bring them back to their hovels as if they were some kind of trophy. Muslims are savages. They're monsters. And so the torture that is going to be perpetrated against Jews with the next iteration of what occurred on October 7th, which is going to occur in 2027 and be 1,000 times worse than what Jews experienced this past year in Israel, it's going to be torturous because Jews are savages. Excuse me. Muslims are savages when it comes to harming Jews.
Right. Psychological warfare.
You created, and now my wife is partnering with you, in something that I got to see, Kirk, you got to see. The world will be delayed in seeing it because of two things. One is I couldn't help myself, and while praising it, saying it's by far the best thing I have seen on our behalf ever, I made several suggestions as to things that would improve it, and in the process, you also found that some of the audio files degraded and that you needed to redo them. And so the good news is that in doing so, between you and my wife, you found some much more effective images. But
yeah,
I'm here to tell you, I'm hoping that it's available next week and we can talk about it next week.
It will be.
It's the most powerful thing I've ever seen. You know, it's one thing for Jews to say, this was awful what they did to us. It's another thing for Goyim, the Nakar, Choder, Yada, Doz Bashar, to say in my voice and to have the covenant members, the two lead of which are both Jews, together this audiovisual presentation of what has happened and will happen to Israel, also through the voice of the prophet Yoel. It is easily the most powerful thing I've ever witnessed. And what it says is that Muslims are savages. They're inhuman.
Unbelievably so.
And you can say, well, I know a Muslim, and they're a nice girl or boy, then they're not Muslims, or you're fooled.
Correct.
The Quran is really quite clear. All good Muslims are terrorists. Should they not be a terrorist, they're no longer a Muslim. Allah calls them hypocrites and tells good Muslims to kill them so that he can torture them forever in hell.
He calls the nonviolent Muslims the number one enemy of Islam.
That is correct. So if you don't know these things, then it's your ignorance. Just shut up because you don't know. The fact is that those who do know, and if you want to know, I have 4,000 pages for you to read in the five volumes of Goddamn Religion. They're all free online. Read them. The case against Islam is black and white, or should I say bloody red. And Islam exists to annihilate Jews. It's a declaration of war against all mankind, but the Jews are first to die. And it is progressives that are facilitating this Islamic onslaught of Israel. So I'm sorry, if you want to define yourself as a progressive, if you're angry at me because I'm criticizing progressives, you do not belong in this covenant. You're not going to be comfortable in God's family. First condition of the covenant is to walk away from the integration of religion and politics, and progressivism is religion integrated into politics. And so you just are not ready. You're not welcome. It's someone must first be willing to walk away from religion, to disassociate themselves from religion, to withdraw from the societal influence of religion and politics before they can even consider what Yahweh is offering. He's not interested in sharing anything he has to offer with anybody that doesn't first forego religion and politics.
Correct.
So I will continue to denounce religion. I will continue to denounce the conspirators, and so many of those on the right are conspiratorial. And So many of those on the right are fundamentalist Christian in their religion. They aren't welcome either. So this is where we stand on those issues. Before we return to Yoel, you can blame this on Kirk. just kidding. I received a letter, I guess, a little over 2 weeks ago that I dished off a response, shared it with some members of the Covenant family, particularly those engaged in social media, because it's helpful for others to see how I would answer somebody who is snippy and cops an attitude. And so I sent it off, and I really thought nothing of it until Kirk sent me a text or an email and said, you know, I think we ought to cover this thing. Yeah, great. The last time we did that, we had a mutiny. The whole Pacific Northwest went off on their own. Was that Moody Scott or Moody Jeff? Moody Jeff, that was who it was. Yep, he was a theological student that had issues with the truth and with Yahweh, and I was dismissive of him and the Pacific contingent. So that's meaner. You can't be meaner. I've done my best to hone my attitude such that it matches my father's. And if you don't like it, then you're not going to like him very much either. So
no doubt. We're
going to continue. No doubt. All right, Dee, I sent this thing to you. You've seen it previous. Mm-hmm. You want to read this, and then I will interrupt you as I see fit.
Sure.
Okay, don't be upset with the interruptions.
No worries. All right, so Miss Harsh is what we're calling her, and she wrote this. Hello, Craig. I was an atheist who has come to discover the existence of God. Lowercase G.
Lowercase G, by the way.
Yeah.
How would one discover the existence of God? She doesn't bother to say. Okay. Or who God is, bother to say.
Or which one?
Which one?
Yes.
There are a few million of them floating around. Particularly of the the lower G-O-D variety, there are millions.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was stunned by the lowercase G. That's weird. It's very strange. She writes, I'm not emotionally attached to religion or the Bible, so I look with a very open heart and open mind for the truth, all caps, the truth.
All caps, so we're screaming, the truth. Okay.
Yeah. I'm also a huge skeptic of most things. Mm-hmm. A friend gave me your book last year, and it was my first experience reading, quote, the Bible. Unquote.
Now, okay, just to stop there for a moment. If you're writing me, how would you reach me? I think there's only one way to reach me.
Email.
You have to go to the website, and you have to follow the About Us, and there's a Contact Us button there. If you were to go to the website, what's your first impression on the website? Is there a book there?
Like 34.
Yep. And so why would you say I read... Someone gave me your book. Which book? And even of the 34 books that's there, what edition of which book?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You want to take the time to write a letter. Can you please tell me which God is it that you think exists? And which book you might have read?
Give me a second, please. Yeah.
And why you would equate that book to the Bible, when I would never use that term. Bible means with Bel. It's Ba-Bel, which is with the Lord, Baal. The Lord is Satan. And it is based on the Hebrew word Babel, which means to confound and confuse by intermixing, in this case, all forms of religion together. It is also derived, the Hebrew word is the basis of the Greek word, which is also the name of a Egyptian goddess. So Great term. Okay. So
since writing that, she says, since then I have Christian friends warn me that you are a recluse, hiding in the islands, trying to deceive people.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's deal with recluse. I would have to be probably the first extroverted recluse in all of history. May even be the first recluse to have done 20,000 talk radio programs and blogs. And probably the first recluse ever to put my name on the cover of 34 books. So it would be a very different kind of recluse. But I began to think here a moment. While recluse is used as a pejorative, it is based on the idea of being reclusive. And if you look up reclusive, it means to withdraw from society or culture. What is the first condition?
To walk away.
What is the first condition of the covenant?
To walk away from Babylon.
So wouldn't every covenant member be reclusive by definition?
Mm-hmm. I think we are.
Yeah. Yeah. So when Dodd was hanging out there in the garden, was he not a recluse? Adam hanging in there in the garden. Was he not a recluse? When Yahweh decided to choose Noah, wasn't it because he was the ultimate recluse?
Mm-hmm.
Associated from the Nephilim community surrounding him?
Mm-hmm.
When he chose Moshe to go into Mitzrayim, wasn't Moshe out tending sheep in the wastelands of Arabia?
I know.
Yes.
Wouldn't that qualify as a recluse? When he reached out to Abraham, wasn't Abraham somewhere on the road out of town, out of Ur, the Chaldeans?
Sure.
Doesn't that make him a recluse?
Yes, sir.
Well, when Yahweh turned down all of the sons of Jesse, and he says, "No, I want the guy that's the recluse out there tending sheep in Bethlehem." So,
and Elia.
What a great celebration of reclusivity. Elia, you had to go find him, man. You had to go into the boondocks. So, be careful of the pejoratives you pick, because in this particular case, it is a condition of the covenant from the sense of reclusivity, which is to withdraw from society. Okay, so hiding in the islands. if I were hiding, would I tell people I was living in the U.S. Virgin Islands?
No.
Would that be the way to? Would you have
you even told us which
on your island. On your website when you have a picture of yourself? Would you have a picture of yourself if you were hiding and sitting there on the beach that's just below my home? Oh, good grief. Okay, so I'm really not very good at this hiding thing, but nonetheless, okay.
Yeah, your attempts to be anonymous have been foiled.
Trying to deceive people. Okay.
Yeah.
That's you want to engage with somebody that has written 34 books and done 20,000 or so radio programs. And you wish to get their attention and have them answer questions for you, would you begin by saying you are deceiving people? If you're saying you are deceiving people, wouldn't you have already made up your mind?
Yeah. I would.
And the letter was just designed to be harsh and mean, and you, because you're harsh and mean, and just leave it at that?
And if she's read your book, she would understand none of this is true, so why ask the question?
If you were trying to deceive when you write your translation, so you're, you know, my whole shtick for 23 years is I have a very unique way of presenting Yahweh's words.
Yes.
And that unique way is first to go to the oldest extant sources, the Dead Sea Scrolls or the Masoretic Text, which is ever older in any particular passage. I will always review it in context. So I'll never take something out of context. Always in context, the whole story, going to the oldest extant source, and I provide as complete and accurate a rendering of each word that is absolutely possible. And then just to make certain that you have the ability to validate or invalidate the translation, I provide the most nominative and genitive form of each word within the brackets. You can copy and paste it into any Google search engine and validate the meaning of the word for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to be a deceiver and have the only translation ever to be fully amplified, providing all potential meanings, and to give the reader the ability to validate the translation themselves? Does anybody else do that?
No.
Does anybody, by the way, when they translate something and there are a variety of potential meanings, or that the meaning that you have deduced from the most reputable lexicons and from the letters that form these words, and you have a significant difference, will write 3 and 4 paragraphs about the word and say, this is my position on the word, but this is what other people have come to think. You're free to make up your own conclusion, but here are the facts. Has anybody else done that?
Well, what a deceiver you are.
Has anybody else,
nobody else has done it,
written books and made them all public for free and then gone back when they have learned something that they have said that isn't as accurate as they would like it to be because, well, they've learned more as they have continued to study, and they'll go back and spend years of their life making the corrections so that every book is as accurate as it could possibly be.
Nobody else.
No, I'm not aware of anybody else that has ever done these things or has chosen to make every book available in its entirety for free. Oh, but it gets worse after trying to deceive people, hiding in the islands trying to deceive people as a recluse.
Yeah, you are also accused of being maniacal and obsessed, possibly even Satan-possessed.
Oh.
Okay. So, the primary gist of goddamn religion, that Allah is Satan, and that Muhammad not only admitted to being Satan, demon-possessed, but that it was obvious. The principal thrust of Christianity, formerly questioning Paul, is to reveal that Paul also claimed to be demon-possessed and that his Lord is Satan. I don't think there's anybody that has ever devoted more of their time, energy, and resources exposing Satan as I have done.
Your work on Ezekiel, it's groundbreaking. No one has done this. No one.
Yeah. What Dee is referencing here is that I was going to write a series of volumes on the events of the last days, and so many things are presented in Ezekiel. You know, the Valley of the Dry Bones and the Gog and Magog conflict, and then all of these final battles, and then the creation of the new temple and the like. I figured, you know, what the heck, I'll start there. And then in Ezekiel 1:1, there's a presentation of Ezekiel presenting his God, and it's all pagan.
Yes.
Got astrological signs and beastly renderings, and I'm going, whoa, this isn't the God I know.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read, it becomes obvious that everything in the book is from Satan's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He presents 25 ways to kill Jews.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about raping Jewish women, graphic about his 25 ways to kill Jews. It's really disgusting. And then his whole plan is to deceive and eliminate God's people. His new temple paves over not only all of Jerusalem, not just the Temple Mount, not just all of Jerusalem, all of Judea, completely paved over by what is essentially a concentration camp to annihilate Jews. His homecoming feast is the Feast of the Beast, where blood is served and flesh is eaten, and it's the flesh and blood of the Gabor. The Gabor is Dod. He then goes through this whole explanation of what happened in the Garden of Eden from the perspective of the Kerub. He even refers to himself as that. He goes into the entire account in first person, explains how he views it. It's Satan's autobiography. It's Satan's playbook. I don't think there has ever been anyone who has been as opposed to HaSatan. And this bears explaining, because as I was completing Goddamn Religion and beginning Twistianity, my rewrite of them, it became quite clear to me why Yahweh decided that he would announce hundreds of prophecies regarding the mission that we are fulfilling, then my specific calling, which is to awaken Yisrael to Yahweh's name, his son, his Moed Mikre, his Bereth covenant, what awaits them, the upcoming harvest, and his ultimate return on Yom Kippurim. And what I came to realize is that Yahweh makes a big deal about this. He probably speaks more about this than almost any other subject. Now, if you look at prophetic topics, and there are hundreds and hundreds of references to the role that I am been asked to perform on behalf of God's people at this time, it would be hard to find any other topic that is as prolific as this one. And Yahweh uses some, a lot of just nominative terms that are of no great consequence unless you're really in on his vocabulary, like Choder, which is a secondary branch, and a sucker, well, secondary branch, that's because Dod is the primary branch. Right. That's because he talks about coming from the rootstock of Jesse, which is the source of Dod, which means that the stump of Israel has fallen, and the Choder is there to give it new life. And he speaks of Nakar, which is an observant foreigner. And he speaks of Bashar, which is a human herald. And he speaks of a coal, which is a voice. No, these are not exalted terms. They're just pragmatic explanations. He speaks of him being an Edah, a witness. He uses the name Yada, which means to know, to recognize, and to acknowledge. But he uses one term that made me exceedingly uncomfortable until I realized what was at stake. That's Zeroah.
Yeah,
there are three Zeroah. Moshe is a Zeroah. He is a strong ram and shepherd who led his people to freedom. But the ultimate Zeroah is Dod. He is not only the ram who has led and guided and protected and nurtured his sheep. He's not only a Zeroah in the sense of he's the strong arm of God. He's a Zeroah in the purest term of the word, the way it is defined in the Torah, which is his sacrificial lamb. He fulfilled Pesach and Matzah. So it is Moshe as the Zeroah that explained the Mikre and how they fulfill the benefits of the covenant, all brought to us by Moshe as the first Zeroah. Dod is the living embodiment of that covenant, and he's the one who has fulfilled the Moed Mikre. great as they were. And they were great. There's no two men in all of human history, no two people in all human history anywhere close to these two men, Moshe and Tut. However, with God's people, it would all be for naught. The entire human experience would be for naught. The Torah would be for naught. If it were not for the third Zeruah.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds impossible. How could you say that? Well, the reason I say it is simple. 3,000 years ago, when Dod was living his first life and was the king of Yisrael, the anointed Messiah, Yahweh pronounced he was him as the Son of God, his chosen one. And Dod explained that he had decided and Yahweh had agreed that he would serve as the Passover lamb, made it exceedingly clear, and then even provided a prophetic eyewitness account in first person of him doing so in the 22nd and 88th Mizmor. And then in the great song of Dod in the 89th Mizmor, Yahweh celebrates all of this. This was recited, inscribed for everyone to read 3,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in those 3,000 years, until just a matter of years ago, not a single Yehud on the planet knew it. Not a single Jew recognized Dod as the Passover lamb, as their Savior, as their Messiah, mm-hmm. as their returning King. Not
mm-hmm.
one. And that was not going to change. Yahweh tells mm-hmm. his people through Yashaya, I searched to find someone that I could communicate through. And I found no one. God made a promise that he would always communicate through people. Because his people said they never wanted to hear his voice again. And there was not a single Jew on the planet for 2,500 years that he could communicate through, who would listen to him, who would speak for him. Not one. And that wasn't going to change. There is absolutely no indication whatsoever that after 3,000 years that all of a sudden Jews were going to wake up and say, oh yeah, really, God's name is Yahweh. Dod is our Messiah and returning King, and he fulfilled Pesach and Matzah. And oh, by the way, the Shavuot harvest is upcoming, and Teruah is our last chance for a gleaning. And oh, by the way, God is returning with Dod on Yom Kippurim in year 6,000 Yah, which is October 2nd. 2033, that's how much time we have left. There was a 0% possibility that that was going to occur. In fact, there isn't a Jew even today, apart from what they have heard or read on this program, that have come to realize that that is true. And so, yeah, we realized. If there wasn't a third Zeruah sowing the seeds that would grow to produce the harvest of Shavuah and Teruah
mm-hmm.
and the remnant that will be there for the ultimate homecoming on Kippurim, it is all for naught. You can't have a harvest without fruit. There would have been
exactly.
no standing grain. There would have been no olives on the uppermost or the cut-off branches. There would have been no remnant to return to. The prophecies of the Mikre would be unfulfilled without the third Zeruah sowing the seeds, which would take root and grow and bear this fruit. That's why Yahweh speaks more about this individual and this mission than any other prophetic witness, even beginning in the Torah, even with the first chapter of the Torah. So why do I mention this in conjunction with exposing and outing Satan? The reason is quite simple. For Satan to prevail, he needs for to deter Yahweh from coming. He mm-hmm. needs for there not to be a Shavuah harvest, for there not to be a Teruah harvest, and most importantly, for there to be no Jews there, no remnant of Yisrael on the homecoming of Yom Kippurim, because then Yahweh and Dod don't return. And that's the way it was going to be until we went to fisticuffs. And
right.
I began my assault on Satan on behalf of God's people. Because
excellent.
Yahweh will prevail. God's people will prevail. Dod will return just as it is predicted. And the reason that's going to happen is because Yahweh enabled a third Zeruah. And that third Zeruah has crippled the ambitions of HaSatan, the adversary. So I can tell you quite certainly that while the religious have been deceived by men who were demon-possessed, Paul, Muhammad, are profound examples. Even with Israel, their first king, Shaul, was demon-possessed. Israel will never hear a voice that is more engaged in exposing and emasculating, condemning Satan than it will in these books and in these words. So, the reason that her Christian community is of that opinion is because both Paul and Muhammad, well, not very clever, they did what Satan does. Satan condemns Satan in the Quran and in the New Testament because Satan hates the adversary title. The only way he can be worshipped as God is for him to shed it. And so he condemns Satan because he hates the adversary title. And both books, the Quran and the New Testament, label anyone who criticizes the satanic scriptures that are found in both of them as being satanic. It's the ultimate ploy of most politicians. If you blame your rival for what you are guilty of, it muddies the water. It clouds the issue. And you end up neutering the number one argument that can be brought against you by accusing, falsely accusing your adversary of what you're guilty of. That's why the Christian community would say such things. All right, I'll get off my my point here, but this one's important to me. It's important the audience understand that there is really a HaSatan. Maniacal we'll deal with later. Obsessed, that part is true. I am obsessed. If you were not obsessed, it wouldn't be possible to sit in this chair and do what I do 13, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I'm exceedingly passionate and obsessed. I've always been passionate about, since 23 years since I was calling in this regard, I have been passionate about doing the best I could to serve Yahweh. When we began to read all of the statements, all the prophecies, one after another, that Yahweh has made regarding this role, and came to appreciate how much it means to him to do it well, my perspective was fundamentally changed. And I am driven by a desire to please my Father. You can call it selfishly if you want, but selfishly, I want, when I first enter his presence, to have the opportunity to stand back at the far back of the room and watch him greet covenant members who came to be part of his family because of the work we did together. I think that would be tremendously rewarding. And I want his celebration of the Shabuah, Teruah, harvest, and his return on Yom Kippurim and his camping out with humankind beginning on Sukkah to be enormously satisfying. And if we do our job well, it will be. The very thought of doing something that has an eternal and pleasing influence on my Father and the Creator God of the universe motivates me.
Yes.
I can also say that I'm somewhat motivated by, I can't imagine the horror of showing up and saying that, okay, so I slipped up. I wasn't as devoted as I should have been, and the results were disappointing. I don't want that. I'm focused on, I want God to be pleased with what we're doing. And I realize that the amount of effort that I put into it now is pays dividends that are infinitely beyond what any of us are investing. And I also recognize, and this has really proven true over these last couple of months, it takes a family. Even when Yahweh was working through individuals like Moshe and Dod, they did not perform alone.
Right.
They're always supported. And in this case, we have an exceedingly wonderful, supportive, engaged, loving, compassionate, passionate family.
Yeah, and, we do.
So that is what we are about in this regard. All right, go ahead. What does it say from there?
All right, she writes that she doesn't know you from Adam, but your books intrigue
clever,
as do your podcast. Your name brings up a lot, all caps, of conflict in my Christian community. Even my husband, who is pretty agnostic, is skeptical of you. In order to get to know you, I wonder, could you answer me these questions?
Okay, before we do that,
how could you
not be religious and have a Christian community that you would call my Christian community?
Right.
How can somebody be pretty agnostic? Isn't agnostic already pretty? I mean, pretty much this, pretty much that.
Yeah.
I mean, she called herself an atheist, and her husband's an agnostic, and they both have a Christian community.
Yeah.
Now, can you even imagine somebody, because listen, the reality here is that even though I've done all of these talk radio shows and podcasts and written these books and the like, and you know, I'm doing a really lousy job of hiding, the fact of the matter is that there would be really no reason to know me unless you had either a religious agenda, a political agenda. You would have to be overtly religious, overtly political, where I am an antagonist towards your religion or your politics, or you were earnestly seeking to know Yahweh, and you've done a search, and it led you here. I can't imagine that there would be anybody outside of, you know, a few little pockets here and there, they would have a clue who I am, other than those two things. You guys work in social media, particularly you, Dee. Is there really any other way that somebody is going to be aware of me?
Not that I've found. Nope.
So there's something very odd going on here with a pretty much agnostic being skeptical. And and this conflict in my Christian community. Now, there is now more and more the possibility that within both the rabbinical community and the Christian community that they are going to be exceedingly bothered and worried by me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think there's anybody who's ever been more thorough at disproving the Christian New Testament than what I have done with Twistianity, formerly Questioning Paul. And there's no one who has been as thorough at dismantling all of the myths of Islam than I have been in a goddamn religion. And clearly no one has been as forceful against rabbinical Judaism as I have been throughout all of these books, but particularly in the Babel series. So it's clear that I would be getting under the skin of a lot of religious zealots. And that's a very good thing. I would view that as an exceedingly positive thing. Yeah, that's good news.
Yep. So she has
I wonder if you could ask these questions. So just from a human point of view, a reasonable point of view, if you were writing somebody and you made these claims of them, demon possession, maniacal, recluse, deliberately deceiving, what do you think the motivation might be for somebody to answer your questions under that basis?
Yeah, very little.
Have you already sort of primed the pump and it's pretty obvious where you stand?
Just a little.
For example, why don't you read the first question, because the first question pretty much says it all.
All right. She writes, are you hiding? Why?
So by putting the why at the end of it, it's like, are you still beating your wife? Are you hiding? Why? So why are you hiding? Okay. I'll deal with that one in my response, but oh, good grief. Okay, number two.
All right. Why, after all of these years, is your following still so small? If God backs you, so you say, where is your grand following?
Boy, isn't
and
that,
finally, three.
Well, just two. I mean, think for a moment how pejorative that was written. If your God backs you, why don't you have a grand following? Obviously, they have never read even the statements, the summary statements that Yahweh etched in stone. What did Yahweh say in terms of the numbers of people that would benefit from his covenant?
Very small, tiny.
He said thousands. What is thousands amongst billions?
That's
infinitesimally small odds.
It's one in a million, isn't it? It's one in a million.
Yep.
Can you tell me at any time in all of history has Yahweh been popular?
No.
Never.
Even during the Exodus. Was Yahweh popular during the Exodus?
They hated him.
Yeah. Did Moshe have a grand following? Did Moshe have a grand following, or was he have nothing but a bunch of whiners and bitter, contentious jerks that were trying to constantly harass him and demean him?
600,000 men and women and children, or 600,000 men alone came out, not including women and children, and only 40,000 men crossed over. That tells you your odds.
And that was a second
Those
generation, because from the first generation, only two. Only two. Where is the grand following? Only two.
Yep, Yosha ben Nun and Caleb, right? Yep.
So, why is your following so small? First of all, did Moshe have a following?
No.
Did Dode have a following?
No.
Do I have a following?
No.
Didn't she just say that I was a recluse hiding away on some island? If I'm a recluse hiding away on some island, I can't have a following.
Not a big one.
I don't have a clubhouse. I don't have a donate to me button.
No.
I have never once in my life asked anyone to follow me.
Nope.
Even Dode didn't say follow me.
Paul sure did, quite often.
Paul quite did, yes.
He has lots of followers.
Well, today, not initially, even in his last letter to Timothy, he says, all of Asia has deserted me.
Yeah.
And rightly so. So, Miss Harsh, I do not have a following. I do not want a following. I would like Yisrael and those who are interested in knowing Yahweh, a name that you didn't bother to use, to follow the path that he has provided home. I am not that path. The path is the Moed Mikre. It begins with the doorway named Passover. And over the threshold of unyeasted bread past Bukurim to Shabuah. That is Yahweh's path. And if you want to meet him, you would have to follow that path home. It is the path that Dode enabled. And there will never be a grand following along that way. God was very clear about that, and nothing's going to change in that regard. Our hope, our expectation, I should say, is for there to be thousands. I would love for there to be 70,000 between Israelites and Goyim, who are part of the standing grain that join us on the Shavuot harvest. I'm not told the number. All we know is that it is a fruitful harvest of standing grain, and Yahweh was pleased with the result. But if there were 70,000 among 8 billion, then we are dealing with a very, very small number of people. As we move to the Teruah harvest, I expect that to be around 7,000. Two or three would be Yehudim. Three or four or five would be Israelites. And I think that is would be a really excellent result amongst the surviving remnant of Jews at that time. We're not told the number of Yehudim that will survive the onslaught of Muslims to the Day of Reconciliation, but I would be surprised if there were more than a few thousand, if even of that, of Yehudim on Mount Moriah awaiting Yah's return. Fortunately, Yahweh is always more impressed with quality than quantity. He was content with Adam. He was content with Noah and his family. He was content with his relationship with Abraham and Sarah, and particularly with the birth of Yishak, and then Jacob and the 12 sons. Yahweh chose a family, a lineage of people, that represent 0.2% of the earth's population. And only a tiny fraction of them actually know him. So I don't think even Yah was interested in a grand following. And so why would I have one?
Right.
All right. So what was next?
Well, we're on question three. She asks you, why are you not demanding debates with ancient Hebrew scholars?
Oh, that's great. You probably know, Dave, because I've shared this a number of times. When I first was tasked with this mission and I began to translate Yahweh's testimony as crudely as I could initially and began to learn, I came up with, I don't know, it was 15, 20 pages of the white paper of, here are the differences just initially between my former religion. I was once an evangelical Christian, an elder in the Presbyterian Church. Here was the differences between my prior religion, the religion that I had rejected, and God's position. I wrote them all down, and at the time, one of my closest friends, and I think I was certainly among his closest friends, was Jerry Falwell, the most well-known preacher probably in the world at that time. He'd been on the front cover of Time magazine multiple times. I was the first televangelist. And Jerry Falwell and I spent tens of thousands of hours together. We were very close. I flew him on my plane to many of his speaking engagements. He actually was a really nice guy, exceedingly bright and enjoyable to be around. But it was during this time that I had begun this study. And so what I asked him, I said, you know, you're the chancellor, founder of one of the largest Christian colleges in the world. I think it is the largest now. I have learned some things which are deeply concerning. And I would appreciate if you could schedule a day. We'll meet starting lunch. We'll go through the afternoon. I want your top Hebrew scholars, everyone that is associated with Old Testament studies. I still use that term at that point. And I want the brightest that you have. And I'd like you and they to join me for a lunch, and we're going to go through some issues and some concerns I have. And I brought up all these issues, that there was no Jesus. God's name is Yahweh. That he is very opposed to religion. And that there is no indication there could have been a New Testament, because when the covenant is renewed, it's renewed with Yisrael and Yehudim, not a Gentile church. No sanction for Sunday worship, no sanction for Christmas and Easter. In fact, they're pagan. I went through the Messiah is David, not this other fellow. Resurrection is a counterproductive concept. You don't want a physical body. You want to get rid of your physical body and become a spiritual being. At the end of the presentation, Jerry Falwell said, everything you've said is true. There's not a single point here that we could argue with. We know it's true. But if we were to say these things, the envelopes that arrive every day that are filled with checks to support my church and my university would stop arriving. If I were to say these things, no one would come and sit in the pews of my church. And if you were to say these things, they will label you a kook, Miss Harsh. I've been there. I have also done talk radio where all manner of clerics have and can call in. I have responded to hundreds of thousands of emails. I have done public debates. One does not demand anything, so I'm sorry your little condescending attitude here. But I did those very things. And never had anyone ever be able to bring up an issue. But you know what this really means when you ask for this as a religious person? It means that you don't have the wherewithal to contradict anything I've said, to disprove anything I've said. So you think that maybe somebody smarter than you can do it. That's what you're saying. Well, if you can't, maybe you shouldn't. What's the next point on Ms. Harshless?
So following up her question, she writes, there are so many professors and academics that have dedicated their whole lives translating Hebrew, the Old Testament. And that's just not true. But anyway.
It isn't true, yes.
Why don't you demand to debate with them? These questions
demand.
Reflect.
Demand, by the way. Demand.
Yeah.
What good would it – it's just so – unbelievably immature for a person to write this kind of thing. But first of all, as you said, it's not true. The number of people who have actually made an attempt to translate Hebrew in any one generation is exceedingly few. Exceedingly few. There are very, very few actual translations of the original Hebrew. Even in all of the various Bible translations, most of them are revisions of the initial Latin Vulgate translation of the Greek Septuagint, which was a translation of the Hebrew. And they continue to parrot the same phraseology because familiarity sells.
Yes.
So there are exceedingly few, even the books that claim, well, this is a new translation.
No, it's not.
Not even close.
Exactly.
Those that say, we
imperative.
Have our translations from the most recent findings in the of the oldest manuscripts, and you compare them to the oldest manuscripts, and they didn't pick up any of it. It's just not
true.
It's
a joke.
No, and one of the things that you learn very quickly, and Kirk, you have been a student of this. You've taken the translations that I've had. You first confronted them and say, well, the man was kind enough to give me the tools that I could use to disprove him or to validate it. Much of what he says resonates with me. I think it is true, but let's take the time. You looked up virtually every word for the first two or three years, didn't you?
Every 10,000 translations I found in my boxes before I moved from Folsom down here to the west to Carmel.
Wow.
Yeah. And not only that, what is the current project you're working on?
I'm working on a glossary to make it easy for somebody to validate this stuff.
Yeah, to
and
do
it
what
will...
you have, which you have done for the last 10 years, correct?
17 years, Evan.
So it's exceedingly easy. Rather than put it off and say, why don't you provide me with a debate of a Hebrew scholar, why don't you just simply get off your butt, Ms. Harsh, and look up these words for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You want everything served up to you on a silver platter because you're special?
Don't.
Why don't you take some initiative? Why do you have to have someone else fight your battles for you? You call yourself a skeptic, and yet you have no idea how to proceed as a skeptic. All right, what does it, Ms. Harsh, say next?
She says, these questions reflect the pushback I keep getting regarding you and your claims.
Thank you.
Yes. So you're in a religious and political community that doesn't like the fact that, speaking for God, I am exceedingly antagonistic towards religion and politics. They are things that God says are the prerequisites. There's only one prerequisite for being part of the covenant, walking away from Babel, from the intermixing and confusion of religion and politics. That is the lone prerequisite. And so she's obviously in a community, either political or religious, where these things are issues and people have pushback. But may I interject? Why do I matter? Are you incapable of reading the words and validating whether or not God said them? Why is it that you are fixated on me as opposed to the source of the words that I'm translating and presenting to you?
Right.
Why must you use an ad hominem argument? Are you incapable of avoiding fallacious arguments? Go ahead, Dave.
She writes, they want these questions answered.
Who's they?
Her Christian community.
If you wanted the questions answered, why don't you read? If you were to read the 34 books that are currently available for free, by the way, are there any material questions about who God is, what he's offering and asking in return that are not answered?
50 pages would do it.
I mean, if she wants to get to know you, as she suggests, then read the books.
Yeah,
and why
you
bother?
You talk a lot about you.
Why bother? Listen, my wife knows me, and she likes me. That's a nice thing. My dogs know me pretty well. They like me. Yeah. Dee, we've spent a fair amount of time together. We get along famously.
Yeah.
But is liking me or knowing me, does it have matter at all as it relates to our mission? No. In fact, I think with everyone, I constantly say that, listen, we have to do this as a team. There are times when the team members chafe. What I would ask you to do is de-emphasize personal conflicts and personal mm-hmm. issues, and let's capitalize on what everyone can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little time left. There's a lot to accomplish. Let's just focus on the message. And that's the same thing I would say to Ms. Harsh. Stop it with getting to know me. I'm irrelevant. I'm meaningful to Yahweh because of the message that I'm providing, but it's the message that I'm providing that is material, not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
There are exceptions to this. Dode is an exception. Moshe is not even an exception to this. Moshe is all about the message,
mm-hmm.
not the man. Dode is equal parts message and man. So Dode is someone we all need to get to know as well as listen to on message. But for everybody else, including me, it's message. And in my case, there is something quite unique about the role that I'm playing that no one else has played previously. And that mm-hmm. is that with Yahshayah, it's fresh from Yahweh's mouth. Yahweh said this, Yahshayah writes this. He gave us the sweeping history of God's people in his prophetic testimony, many of those insights for the first time. Moshe listened to Yahweh explain the covenant and his Moed Mikre and the purpose of things like the Yobel. And so he was revealing truth for the first time. I'm not. Everything I have to say is conveyed by previous prophets. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
My conclusions, my presentations, my attitude, my perspective, my warnings, my encouragements, they're all based upon what Yahweh revealed through his prophets. So that makes me nothing but a messenger. And as a messenger, all that matters is the message. All right, go ahead, Dave.
All right, she says, I have a 5-year-old son. Circumcising him is something my husband would never allow. How can I convince him you are legit?
Interesting there. If the husband would never allow it, how are you going to get it done? Second of all, he's 5, not 8 days old. Third, why would my legitimacy matter when God is explicit on this issue?
No.
Yep.
Excellent.
Go ahead, Dee.
She writes, thank you for your understanding. I realize the tone of this email is harsh.
Harsh.
The tone.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
But like you, I am cynical, especially of man, and I need more. Apparently more than 34 volumes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah.
She says, thank you. Also, before I go, after reading your introduction book last year, I stood up and felt the presence of something behind me, watching me. I stood up and turned around and saw this image attached. She put a picture. I felt in that moment that God, lowercase g, or an angel, or the spirit was communicating something to me. She's seeking your advice. Can you take a look and pay particular attention to the top left section of the cloud?
Thank you, kind regards,
Ms. Harsh. Yeah, the clued. I was doing her a service there.
All right. I'll probably have covered most of this, but let me share my response. And by the way, we are mocking this. And we mocked someone previously because it deserves to be mocked. And if you don't like a mocking tone, you're just not going to like Yahweh because that is the tone that he takes.
Yeah.
That's the tone that Eliyah takes. And we're going to get our fill of Eliyah here shortly. It is the only approach to deal with this level of deliberate ignorance.
Yeah.
And
I just can't get over that she says this and then asks you to work at something and give her feedback because you're
amazing.
Unreliable.
Yeah, you'll hear my feedback here in a moment.
Okay.
Hello, Harsh. It's good to hear that I'm irritating Christians in your religious community and that the best you or they can do against the wealth of information in the 35 books that I have written and offered freely online about who God is and who he is not is pose mean-spirited ad hominem attacks. Over 23 years that I have been devoted to exposing and condemning religion and translating and explaining the testimony of Yahweh, a name, by the way, she never mentions. Never once in hundreds of thousands of emails and talk radio programs with callers has anyone shown that I am incorrect. You didn't either. But you did a fine job of being harsh, which was your intent by your own admission. Your response is not surprising in what has become a thoughtless generation so horribly influenced by progressive ideology, evangelical Christianity, conspiracy theories in the West, and Orthodox Christianity, Islam, and Hinduism elsewhere. Personal attacks and irrational opinions are the retort of those incapable of using evidence and reason. This moronic approach prevails due to the ignorance and irrationality of the audience. It is amazing to witness the decline in judgment, in logic and rhetoric, among the religious, political, and conspiratorial, as well as the psychotic. In your long letter, you made no attempt to refute any of the hundreds of thousands of translations, commentaries, conclusions, or insights that I have shared. All you did was ask questions designed to disparage me, as if slandering the messenger nullified the message. That approach is fallacious. If I were hiding, Miss W., why would I tell people where I live if I were hiding? Why would I offer everything I have written free online with my name on the cover while a team of people work on behalf of this message and its source to promote it throughout social media? If I were hiding, why would there be an about the author introduction in all 35 books? If I were hiding, why would I have done 15,000 talk radio programs and podcasts? Why would I post a picture of myself on the yadaya.com website? If I were hiding, why would I have written 7 books exposing and condemning Islam and 4 exposing and condemning Christianity under my actual name? When religious zealots either kill or slander their critics.
So true.
If I were a recluse, why would I expose myself in these ways? Is anyone capable of thinking in your religious community? I live on an island because there are fewer distractions and I can translate, contemplate, and write 12 to 14 hours a day every day. I enjoy nature more than asphalt, more than concrete and traffic, and I love the environment and weather. Simple. Obvious. If I were trying to deceive, why would I do so by more completely and accurately presenting the Torah, prophets, and Psalms from the oldest extant sources?
Right.
Are you and your friends and family suggesting that Yah was a deceiver? If my purpose was to deceive, and if I were serving Satan, then why would all of my conclusions and insights about God have been deduced from the Word of God, that which is proven, inspired, through prophecy. If I were in league with Satan, why am I the first to expose the fact that both Paul and Muhammad admitted that they were demon-possessed, destroying the credibility of the two most popular religions, admittedly inspired by Satan? Why was I the first to explain Isaiah's prophecy regarding the adversary in his 14th chapter?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I the first to prove that Ezekiel was inspired by Satan? And since I don't solicit a following or accept donations, if not altruistic, what's my motivation? And why does it matter? Are you so shallow that you are incapable of dealing with the message instead of the messenger? Is truth defined by the person conveying it, or is it found in the merit of what is being conveyed? And if the latter, why didn't you focus on it rather than me?
Mm.
If I was popular, I'd be proven a fraud. Yahweh has never been popular, even among the children of Yisrael, even when in their midst, even when saving them. Conflicting religions have always been more appealing than the truth, and it will remain that way until the very end. Yahweh is using me to awaken one in a million,
mm-hmm.
not a million save one. God's home in heaven is reserved for the set apart, those who are not popular and who do not belong, those who are religious or political. Otherwise, heaven would be like the hell men and women have perpetrated here on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Cult leaders seek a following. They seek control and wealth. I openly and freely share what I have learned from the Torah, Navi, Wamizmor, and ask nothing of anyone for having done so. What you do with it is up to you. I don't want you or anyone to come to me. My voice leads to Yahweh. I began by debating theologians, Christians, and Islamic, even rabbis. Never once did any of them raise a single rational argument against anything I said or wrote. They never advance beyond rational fallacies. What your Twistian pals are actually saying is that they aren't able to refute what I've written or said, so they need someone they think might be smarter and better informed than they are to refute my message, since it destroys their faith. And all the while, I gave the naysayers the ability to validate or invalidate the translations for themselves, providing the underlying Hebrew words being translated within the parentheticals so that they could copy and paste them into any online search engine and conduct their own investigation. They don't. Why?
Nope.
Because by doing so, they prove my conclusions. So it's easier and safer slander me. Harsh, ignorant, irrational, religious. The reason that I do not write for, speak to, or continue to debate the religious is that they are a waste of time. Something your accusatory questions demonstrate. No amount of unassailable evidence, even from the Word of God, nor irrefutable logic, is capable of resolving the indoctrination of religion or politics. The response is always and was yours.
Mm-hmm.
Slanderous ad hominem accusations. Perhaps to be fair, Miss W., and you should demand, if you want to be fair, Moses, David, and Isaiah to answer these same questions, since their message and mine are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And why stop there? Demand that Yahweh answer them too. have him explain why his message is so unpopular, why he doesn't have a large and grand following, why so few know his name, and why he is so opposed to religion, is spoken of so badly in that community. Maybe you'll convince God to become a Christian or a Muslim. Maybe even give up his covenant, Torah, invitations, and circumcision and become a progressive. Maybe you'll get him to start a prayer group and let me know how it goes. Maybe even send me a picture and ask me to comment on it. Yeah, it was clear. No one approaches him until they have disassociated from religion and politics. He does not want that trash in his home. Therefore, I convey his message to those who have done so, this very thing, per his instructions, and I ignore the rest, unless they write me as you have done. And I have no interest in the religious, nor does Yahweh. So maybe God is hiding from them too. By pushing the decision on circumcising your son off to me, rather than what Yahweh has to say on the subject, is further evidence that you aren't willing to listen to him. Your loss and the loss of your son. Nice picture of the sky with the mini rainbow. As for me, I'm fond of rainbows. Craig Wynn, yada yada. I have a little postscript. You may want to look up the definition of the word maniacal, which is wild and extremely violent behavior, before you use it against someone you were accusing of being a recluse hiding on an island, especially when he is outspoken in his opposition to violence and has been sufficiently steadfast to write 35 books encouraging thoughtful deliberation regarding salvation over the past two decades. Maniacal is what Christians, Muslims, and progressives have and are doing to Jews. Maniacal is what occurred on 10/7/23 in Israel and is manifest in the protests on behalf of the vicious perpetrators of rape, abduction, torture, and murder. If you want to understand maniacal, then read the five volumes of Goddamn Religion. As further evidence, before you, as a member of a Christian community, accuse someone of being demon-possessed, read the conclusion of 2 Corinthians.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Conflicted?
Yeah.
God or man? Relationship or religion? Observe or accuse? Study and think or slander the messenger? Yahweh or Jesus? The Torah or New Testament? Moshe, David, and Isaiah, Paul and Luke. Set apart or popular? My books are freely available to you at yadaya.com. You can read them or reject them, benefit from them or demean me for having written them. You can come to know Yahweh as he revealed himself to us or continue to believe in the religious myths of your popular Christian community. The choice is yours.
Very well written.
Well done. Well done.
You know, that was done is what you really shouldn't do in a letter, which is that I read her letter and I tried to respond to every point that she raised and then give her a general assessment of what was wrong with her approach. Not for her, because someone that's going to write with the tone that she wrote with and say the kind of accusatory things that she said is not reachable. So I actually wrote it because we have now social media sites, and I think it is helpful for the Covenant family to know how to deal with these kinds of things. So I try to set an example. But in this particular response, I read what she had written, which is uncommon for me. Typically, I'll just scan something like this and then toss it away two or three sentences into it. But I did in this case, read the entire thing and then responded to it point by point. And it, I don't know if it took 15 or 20 minutes. And normally then the proper approach is to wait a day or two and soften it before you send it. But in this case, I decided to hit send, and this is the result. And having gone through it again today, I think it is really quite appropriate.
Yes, sir.
We have only 15 to 20 minutes left in our program, but we can resume where we were on UL 211. We probably won't even get past this one statement. But I have a newfound affinity for UL. His name means Yahweh is God. He has more to say that is pertinent to Yehudim today than almost anyone. His focus is on what is occurring now to Jews and what is going to occur as we move towards Yahweh's return, and how should they respond. He is, in effect, doing my job. So he makes my job a lot easier because all I have to do is read what he said and make certain the audience understand it, and we have mission complete. But Yahweh is very good at providing these tools. And one of the things I did not say when we were talking about the role that I was asked to play is that the last thing I'm going to do is brag about having been given this role for two reasons. One is that we're a long way from done yet, and we got a lot of work to do. And the second reason is Yahweh did for the Choder, Yada, the Nakar, more than he has done for anyone else. The only person in all of God's story that he ascribed and bestowed all seven spirits. I mean, spirit of boldness and of understanding and communication,
wisdom.
He gave it all to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that would not have been necessary had he been more competent on his own. You know, when Yahweh said that he gave his spirit to Dod when he was anointed at 8 and his spirit never left him, his spirit was singular. With the Choder, with the Nakri, with Yada, with his cold voice, it's seven. And God goes through and explains each of the seven and what their role is in enabling what it is that he is writing for his people at this time. So there wouldn't have been seven if one was sufficient for Dod, and Dod was much more insightful and brilliant and a better communicator than I. So there's a reason for the seven. That's why we don't brag. We can be very proud of what we've accomplished as a family. But the very fact is that Yahweh has made certain that we would prevail. He's given us everything we need to prevail.
Yeah.
And the reason he has done this is because the failing in this case is unconscionable. It annuls the entire human experience. And so God was going to make certain that we made this work. Yahweh will offer appointing, enabling, and putting in place, called you. For the appearance and presence of his especially worthy individual, an empowered and capable man of exemplary character who is especially forceful and bold. For it is certain that his place to camp out is closely associated with him, greatly exceeding that which is required, therefore robust, capable, influential, and forceful, sufficiently competent to complete the mission. The one who engages and acts upon his message from his word is indeed exceedingly valuable and uncommonly important on the day of Yahuwah. And he is tremendously respected by whoever is lifted up and carried away by him. Yoel 2:11. I did not think that this is where I knew we were going to start in Yoel 2:11. I did not read it prior to the program. I probably would have said less had I done so. And you might say, why would I not read it before the show? And the answer is quite simply that if I am speaking from the heart extemporaneously about Yahweh's passages and what he is saying to us, then these programs can be augmentative. They can go beyond what I have written. I realize that while Yahweh much prefers the written word, because it can be validated much more readily, and it is has a legacy and an existence to it that the spoken word does not have, a reliability, a dependability, an endurance with the written word. The two go together beautifully, the spoken word and the written word. And it is important to speak of Yahweh's testimony because there is a passion that can be conveyed and nuances that aren't possible in writing that are possible with the spoken word. And so I prefer to be vulnerable in doing these programs so that I can speak to you from the heart about what God is saying to us. However, that said, there is one topic that is exceedingly difficult to discuss, and my preference would be never to have to discuss it. I loved being anonymous as Yada and wrote under that pen name for 10 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not what God wanted. God wanted this mission, Yada Yahuwah, to be exceedingly well known. He wanted what we are writing and what we're saying to be endorsed such that his people would listen. And so while I would prefer anonymity because you have all of the advantages, all the enjoyment of studying Yahweh's testimony and being with him and learning and the joy of sharing what you have learned, doing so without responsibility, that all changes with statements like this. Now there's responsibility. And God has made not only stated expectations, he has provided his assessment of what we're doing. And while I don't concur with him, I do not view myself as he presented me in this statement. I just don't. Yahuwah does not see me as I see me. He sees me as Dode enabled me to be. See, Dode, by taking away all of my guilt, everything I've ever done that is inadequate, and depositing it in Sheol on Matzah, made me look perfect in God's eyes. And so there are some really positive things that I can contribute to God's family. And that's all God sees. It's the best possible kind of relationship. You know, a loving father that sees the best in his son. And you have to understand that Yahweh's approach is to work through us. And so when he finds someone who is excited to work with him, he wants to share credit. So when our relationship is that he's infinitely more responsible and deserves infinitely more credit than I do, that's not the way that Yahuwah sees it. His preference is to credit us for our contribution, no matter how infinitesimal it might be compared to his, because there are so few people willing to do it, and because he enjoys it so much.
Yeah, sure.
So you'll have to understand this is a proud father speaking of a unique son in this regard, and he's saying things that sound over the top to me. But who of us as parents haven't said these things about a son or daughter at their proudest moments? So Yahweh's saying, Yahweh will offer appointing, establishing, and putting in place his call, his voice. Now, mind you, Yahweh made a commitment. He would not speak directly to his people. They asked him not to. He agreed, I won't do it. And he immediately went to the plan where he spoke through Moshe and then spoke through Yosha ben Nun. He spoke through Shamuel, and then he spoke through Dod. He spoke through Moshe. He spoke to these people that he chose. He spoke through them, and they became his voice to his people. What Yahweh is saying here, and this is in context with the time of Jacob's troubles, that he will offer, appoint, and enable putting in place his voice. No one else explaining how to properly pronounce Yahweh's name or how it is important to know and use. There's no one else that is celebrating what Yahweh has achieved through his son, Dod, the Messiah, King, the Zeruah, the sacrificial lamb, and our Savior, our returning King, that understands his seven Moed Mikre and how they play out not only in our past, but how they will be fulfilled in our future and when, why, where. That understands the five conditions and five benefits of the covenant and how they are delivered by answering God's invitations to meet with him on these 7 days. There's no one else that is speaking to God's people and urging them to come home to Father and Son. Yahweh will offer appointing and enabling. I love the idea of enabling more than appointing, but he did both. Putting in place, mm-hmm. Nathan. It's his gift. You know, I wanted to write on the covers of both Goddamn Religion, this expose on Islam and how it is perpetrating genocide against God's people, and on Twistianity. These are gifts to Yisrael and to Yehudim. And both of them, particularly Goddamn Religion, I have risked my life to tell you this story. It is my gift to you. Clearly, from the Father, but from the Father through one of his sons, his voice, his call. I am the voice calling out in the wilderness to make a raised highway back home for the great day of Yahweh when he will return on Yom Kippurim. For the appearance and presence of his special, especially worthy individual. Well, can't deny worthy when he is aided and abetted by the seven spirits of Yahweh. You can read Yeshaya 11 where this is presented. The seven spirits of Yahweh would make a mouse worthy of roaring. So I will accept that because the seven spirits of Yahweh make that possible. Certainly an empowered individual who is now, as for exemplary character, that is Yahweh's perspective. I'm certainly judgmental. I certainly stand up for what is right. And there's no question that I am exceedingly forceful and bold. If Yahweh wanted forceful and bold, he got it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like he does. For it is certain that his place to camp out is closely associated with him. Now, his can be lowercase, can be uppercase. It is certain that Yahweh could be saying that through his prophet, that his place to camp out, which will be on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem, on the midst of Yehuda within Yisrael on this blue planet swirling in space, that Yahweh's place to camp out, which would be during Sukkah, or his place to camp out in Shamaim, is closely associated with lowercase him. In other words, his voice is leading people to the place where we can all camp out with Yahweh. And therefore, these things are directly associated. It is exceeding what is required. Again, I don't like having to be the messenger of this because it's uncomfortable speaking about oneself, particularly what God has to say about an individual. But it is exceedingly comforting to hear God say that he is greatly exceeding what is required. Now, been given every advantage a person can give and be given and more. But Yahweh is not a slave driver. He does never usurps free will. It is always the choice at 5 o'clock in the morning to sleep in or come into my study and commence again. It is always the opportunity when the clock strikes seven and the eyes grow tired to know, should I stay and do a little more? Today was a fruitful day, 125 pages of edits in one of the books that I am rewriting. You know, and so what I'm reading here is, as hard as I am trying to meet my father's expectations, my father is saying I'm exceeding them. That means that we as a family are doing more than God expected of us. And the dividends of that will reverberate for all time because that means there's more members of the covenant family enriching the experience. And also that those who are members of the covenant family are growing in their knowledge of Yah and are working to protect and enlighten God's people. So after saying that we are greatly exceeding what is required, he says, therefore, he is robust and capable, influential and forceful, sufficiently competent to complete the mission. And this means that Yahweh has seen our future. We do everything that he had hoped of us. And the results pay dividends. We will succeed. Our Father is already pleased. The one who engages and acts upon his message from his word is indeed exceedingly valuable and uncommonly important on the day of Yahweh. And that's the point. That's the entire point, is that everyone who engages and acts based upon what we have shared in these volumes of books under Yada Yahweh, what we have shared on these programs, that everyone who engages and acts upon that message, which is Yahweh's message, explained for our time and God's people at this time, will become exceedingly valuable and uncommonly important on the great day of Yahweh, which is Yom Kippurim, in year 6000 Yah, sunset, October 2nd, 6:22 p.m., is when it will commence in 2033, less than 10 years from now. God enabled me to do this for you so that everyone who responds and takes advantage of what we have collectively offered becomes valuable to God. So valuable to God, he views everyone who capitalizes and acts upon what we have shared in his name as his sons and daughters, the most precious things in the world to him. his family. And he is tremendously respected by whoever is lifted up and carried away by him. Again, it doesn't matter if the he is capitalized or lowercase, whether Yahweh is offering credit to those working with him, or he is acknowledging that to those who are valuable to him tremendously as he lifts them up and carries them away. He could also be saying that come the standing grain harvest of Shavuah, the olive harvest of Teruah, and of the homecoming of Yom Kippurim, that those that are lifted up and carried away on these days are not only respected by Yahweh, not only respect and revere Yahweh, but also have an appreciation for the contribution of the three Zeruahs that made it possible for them to be here. It took all three. Moshe explaining the covenant and explaining the Moed Mikre, providing God's teaching in the Torah. Dode for fulfilling it, for explaining it, for embodying it, for living it.
Yes.
And the third, Zeruah Yada, for bringing this to the attention of the world, and especially Yehudim and Yisrael, in advance of these harvests and of God's return. I certainly don't have anything to add to that. We've gone well past the time that Blog Talk Radio would normally allow us to speak. I can only hope, expect. I guess I don't have to hope anymore. God has been quite clear. Working together, we prevail. God's family grows and matures such that we celebrate the Shavuah and Teruah harvest and the homecoming on Yom Kippurim so that we enjoy camping out together in an earth restored to the conditions of Eden, and that our Father is proud of his sons and daughters, just as we are proud of what he has done for us and grateful. So I leave you tonight with a humbled heart to hear my Father speak of me this way, but he's also speaking of all of his covenant children this way, knowing that this is God's intent. There is nothing that pleases him more than to enjoy his children doing as he once done, working at his side, contributing to his family. So I would encourage you to become part of it. He will say this same thing of you. A happy Shabbat to one and all. May Yisrael be safe during this upcoming week as the demons of Islam seek to punish the nation for assassinating a snake. May Yah protect his people. May they open their minds and hearts and come to know him and accept what he has written. And I hope his influence is on Dee, you, and Leah as you complete this very powerful video that will be released this week. And I'm encouraged, Kirk, that your glossary will soon be completed. It is a powerful tool in helping people validate what God is saying. It would normally be frightening, and I told Dode when he was here, because he's also going to help you in the presentation of it, for a translator to have every translation and every word explained, because translation is not just an exacting science. It's an art form. God uses words as a painter, and you're a painter, Kirk, uses his pigments. And there are many shades and many colors to his words, and they take on different hues in different contexts. Mm-hmm. And so knowing what to bring out of a term and what not to convey is derived really from having a relationship with him, coming to know him, understanding what he is offering and expecting in return, and trying to be both consistent and also fresh. And so when you boil it all down and say, you know, you've translated this one word 500 times, there will be differences. And it is in making all of them available in this kind of a term that normally a translator would become more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that is something to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do this program the way we do it. We want to be vulnerable. We want our listeners to sense our vulnerability, our willingness to be transparent, to lay
mm-hmm.
it all on the line, to lay all of our cards face up on the table, for you to know what we know and for you to know what we don't know. Because that really is the essence of being trustworthy and dependable and credible.
Right.
And so with that in mind, we wish you a wonderful good evening. We wish you both, Kirk, a conclusion of your project, and Dee on the many that you have, and with Leah, and the restoration of our books with Amazon and Jackie and all the work her team has done. The editors are now working overtime as we're making such progress. We've actually had posted now Twistianity Volume 1, and within a week's time we may have Twistianity Volume 2 up. So this is a wonderful time with the family operating together. And I want to thank each and every one of you for working to awaken God's people, to make them aware of his name and of his return, of what he is offering and what he is expecting of them. And for the first time, for them to consider not being religious or political and being open to the covenant relationship. May Yah bless. We look forward to being with you this time next week. Good night.
Good night, y'all.
Good night, guys.
This summer, ditch the walk to the rideshare lot at Love Field and get picked up curbside in a luxury SUV. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto. We've redefined your airport ride with professional employee drivers, a consistent fleet of SUVs, and plenty of luggage space in every Alto. Plus, every Dallas Alto has a car seat for your little adventurer, too. Take your time. Your Alto will wait as long as you need, and the first 5 minutes are on us. Try your first ride free with code SUMMER. Download the Alto app or visit RideAlto.com/radio to learn more.
Hey, everyone. It is Ryan Seacrest here. Ready to heat up your summer vacation? Get ready. Things are about to get sizzling at Chumba Casino. Your summer getting a whole lot hotter with a special daily login bonus waiting just for you. So sign up now for reels of fun and reels of prizes right here at Chumba Casino with yours truly. Join me at ChumbaCasino.com and dive into a summer of social casino fun.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.